Welcome to Technology and the Arts,
a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll talk about a Wired how-to wiki, how to explain DRM to your dad, a guide to photographers' rights, and an article on how to become a self-taught master. Plus, we'll discuss an IT professional who wrote a science fiction novel on his cell phone during his daily commute to and from work, and WXPN's countdown of 885 most memorable musical moments. We'll talk about all of this and more just ahead on Technology in the Arts for Wednesday, August 1st, 2007. Now here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny.
Welcome to another edition of Technology in the Arts podcast. As always, Technology in the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts.
And to let you know who we are, my name is Brian Kelly. I'm a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter, musician, and science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey.
And I'm John Lemazny, a father, artist, musician, poet, and technologist living in New Jersey.
John and I recorded our most recent conversation about technology and the arts via an iChat session. Here is that conversation.
I'm doing pretty good, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. What have you been up to lately?
Well, I'm taking an online graduate course at Rider University in the leadership program, the organizational leadership program, and I'm loving it quite a bit. Thanks go out to my classmates and to my instructor, Marie Steeney. It is a great opportunity. It's only my second opportunity to take a class online, but it's great fun, and I'm learning quite a bit. Other than that, I'm just really enjoying the rest of the summer. Hearing cicadas outside my window, and I'm not too happy about that because it means the end is coming. But other than that, I'm really enjoying my summer. How about you?
Well, this past weekend was a movie double feature for me. Took in the Simpsons movie, which was great for any longtime Simpsons fan. Has to go see it and stay to the end of the final credits. Yeah, you will not be disappointed. And saw Hairspray, which is very good. Obviously a musical. John Travolta is a little creepy playing the mother, though. That's a little weird. But other than that, a very good movie. And Christopher Walken's in it. I mean, anything Christopher Walken in it is usually good. Also went to the Exponential Music Festival presented by my favorite radio station, WXPN. That was July 19th through 22nd, I believe, on the waterfront in Camden, New Jersey. And that was a really good time. Saw the Smithereens play, Mark Broussard, Suzanne Vega, this really great band from Australia, the Cat Empire. Really good stuff. So that was fun. And other than that, my girlfriend and I are just about at our one-year anniversary, depending on when anybody listens to this podcast.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a very good year, probably the best year of my life. But other than that, that's about all that's new with me. Do you have anything you'd like to share with our audience as far as technology and the arts go?
For those of you who are familiar with our site, you know that I keep a tumble up at crumb.tumblr.com, and I'm going to tell you about things I recorded in the last couple of weeks. The first thing is an article on the Wired How-To Wiki called Explain DRM to Your Dad, and the intro for that goes, my friend John was trying to think of a way to explain the problem with digital rights management to his dad and a friend of ours who doesn't see what's wrong with it. He compiled a list of examples of DRM-related problems to help people understand what the big deal is with DRM. DRM stands for Digital Rights Management. And it goes on to explain some situations in which DRM causes an issue regarding media, the sharing of media, the copying of media, etc. Secondly, I wanted to tell you about The Photographer's Right. The Photographer's Right is a downloadable flyer explaining your rights when stopped or confronted for photography. It goes on to say, the Photographer's Right is a downloadable guide that is loosely based on the bus card and the Know Your Rights pamphlet that used to be available on the ACLU website. It's a very interesting way to keep handy a list of rights that you have as a photographer and be able to quickly know what you're able to do as a photographer if somebody comes up to you and asks you to stop taking photos. Thirdly, I would like to make you aware of a recent study that I think is interesting because of a situation between Brian and I. The study was done to determine whether or not obesity is socially contagious, and the study found that it was. It says that a new study finds that when the scale reads obese for one individual, the odds that their friends will become obese increased by more than 50%. And later on in the article, it mentions, conversely, the researchers found that thinness is also contagious. I thought this was particularly interesting considering that I had a weight loss over 100 pounds recently, and at the same time, Brian lost some significant amount of weight. So I know from personal experience that this does seem to have some truth to it.
Of course, we didn't know each other was on a weight loss mission at the time when we were both losing the weight.
Right, we ran into each other and we just happened to be a lot lighter.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I remember that day.
So finally, I wanted to mention an article that says, Become an Autodidact, 10 Ways to Become a Self-Taught Master. And it goes on to say, some of the greatest people in history have educated themselves to a large degree using a process known as autodidactism. This is something that's more easily undertaken these days with a great wealth of online tools available to anyone. It continues, whether you've gone to college or not, you can learn just about anything these days on your own. Want to learn about classics, carpentry, and home maintenance, philosophy, cooking, chess, or computer programming? It's all online, and with a little bit of excitement, you can motivate yourself to learn a subject in a growing number of ways. I feel like the internet is empowering society in ways that we have not begun to understand yet, and this article speaks a little bit to that. The fact that now we can contact anybody in the world, potentially, and find out things about any topic just by hopping on the internet and doing a search on Google and coming up with 100 great resources to master that topic. We're living in an amazing time, and I just wanted to bring light to this article, which talks a little bit about the amazing time that we're in.
Right, and that pretty much speaks to the heart of our podcast, because the especially for someone who wants to learn about the arts or learn an art, technology is there to help them learn that craft. If you want guitar lessons, I mean, you can find a podcast that teaches you how to play guitar. You can even get that, through cable on-demand services. They have free guitar lessons on there. It's just an amazing time right now, and that's kind of why we started this podcast. For someone, who wants to learn an art especially, but, who's someone who wants to learn anything, it's a great time.
I agree. And I think that we're only going to continue to benefit from the sharing of information across the globe. So that's all I have for this week. How about you, Brian?
Well, the first thing I want to talk about is an Italian man, a commuter. He's actually an IT professional who had this idea for a science fiction book in his head, but didn't really have time to sit down and write the book, except during his commute to and from work. So he decided to start typing away on his Nokia mobile phone and wrote a 384-page science fiction novel. And then he published it on Lulu.com. So he basically typed this manuscript on his phone and then downloaded them onto his home computer for proofreading and editing. But, you know, he wrote the book itself on the phone, and then he submitted it to Lulu and had it published, you know, on that self-publishing site. So just follow the links in the show notes to read the news story there, and I will also put a link to the actual book on lulu.com. But it was very interesting that, you know, this guy got around the whole issue of not having time to write by, you know, writing on his cell phone, which I can just imagine how sore his thumbs were. But hey, he got a book published out of it, so no pain, no gain, I guess. The other thing I want to talk about is libraries have this incredible access to, are offering free access to all these databases and search sites, and as well as music and audiobooks. And there's an article on CNetNews.com how, you know, a lot of people might be trying to steal books or music, and they might be trying some fancy ways to do it, and really you can get a lot of this stuff for free with a library card. There's just a plethora of stuff you can get at your local library, but a lot of people just don't go down there. So you might want to stop into your local library and, you know, get a library card and check out the services they offer. So I thought that was interesting. And also, there was a recent blog post, and this is another CNetNews.com story that I found. Recent blog post that talked about Congress referring to peer-to-peer file sharing networks as a national security threat because they enable federal employees to accidentally share sensitive or classified documents.
Of course it is.
Right, because, you know, it's not the actual, you know, politicians or governmental workers that should know better to put sensitive documents into a shared folder that, you know, might be accessible via a peer-to-peer file sharing service. You know, let's blame the file sharing service and not, you know, and not the incompetent government official. So here's one response on a blog called Tech Dirt. Politicians blame P2P software for not stopping government employee stupidity. Would you elect as your congressional representative someone who blamed automakers because a bad driver crashed a car through his or her own negligence? Would you elect as your congressional representative someone who claimed that email was a threat to national security because it can and has been used by spies to transmit confidential data? Probably not. Why? Because that's clearly misplaced blame. Finally, what I'd like to talk about is something that I think is very interesting. WXPN, which I mentioned earlier, my favorite radio station in the world, that broadcasts out of the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Every year they have a 885 countdown because their frequency is 88.5 FM. Last year, it was the 885 greatest artist of all time, as submitted by the listeners. And this year, I think it's really interesting because it's not something you can really, even though that was kind of intangible because it was based on opinion, this one is really cool because what they are putting together is a list of the 885 most memorable musical moments. And the staff is putting together, I think, the top end of the list. But for the bottom end of the list, they're looking for listener submissions. And when I was at the XPN Festival, they had people going around. There was actually a video booth where you could record a video of your musical moment that you wanted to share. They were going around recording people. But there's also a blog that's set up, and you can get there. Just go to xpn.org and look. There's a link for this 885 most memorable musical moments, and you can submit what to you is a memorable musical moment. And I have a link in the show notes to my submission, which is June 15th 1986. It was at Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands, and it was for, I was at the Amnesty International Conspiracy of Hope show that was there that day. And that was the first time I ever saw Peter Gabriel play live. I only knew a little bit about him at the time. I knew he was the former lead singer of Genesis, and I kind of knew Shock the Monkey. But that day I became a Peter Gabriel fan, and it was because even though I wasn't a huge fan, and I don't think, I would say about 95% of the stadium probably they weren't huge Peter Gabriel fans. When he performed Biko, which was about slain activist Stephen Biko, South African activist Stephen Biko, that back then it was, in 1986, it was the height of apartheid. And here we are at this civil rights concert. And he performs Biko, which has this, oh thing at the end, a little more dramatic than that. But Peter Gabriel started, performing, and all these people who really weren't huge Peter Gabriel fans just responded to it. The whole stadium was doing it. And, it ends with Peter Gabriel saying, "The rest is up to you." He walks off stage, and the band, one by one, starts walking off stage. But the crowd kept on doing it. They just kept on chanting. And it was just such an incredible moment how he was able to take over the crowd, most of whom really didn't know Peter Gabriel's music. But he just, it was like a religious experience, especially for me. I mean, I was still a few weeks away from my 15th birthday. And, that day, which also included me seeing Miles Davis for the only time in my life, which was amazing. That day changed my musical outlook. From that day on, I shifted away from the mainstream and started looking for more, adventurous, musical horizons. But that moment with Peter Gabriel and the end of Biko and everybody chanting at the end, after he left the stage, it was just an incredible moment. And that was what I submitted to XBN. And fortunately, someone has a YouTube video of that moment. So I included that in my post. So if you go there, you can also see what I was talking about. It is just, I get chills watching it now. It was just incredible. So I think that's just cool that XBN is doing this thing and the technology's there where, people can share these moments, and with things like YouTube, I'm able to recreate that moment. I'm actually able to explain what was going through my head at the time and offer visual evidence. So I think it's just really fantastic. And anybody who's really into music like I am, I think they should, check that out and, submit their own musical moment. But now it's time for the Technology and the Arts Events Calendar.
This is your Technology and the Arts Events Calendar. Soundmarks, which runs from June 8th through August 18th, 2007, at Art Interactive in Cambridge, Massachusetts, is an exhibit of site-specific sound and video installations by Amy Stacy Curtis and the team of Zach Poff and M.B. Aldridge. Employing both new media and traditional audio technologies, these artists experiment with ways in which art can serve as a catalyst for common experience and a site for community exchange. For more information about Soundmarks, visit www.artinteractive.org or call 617-498-0100. To stay informed about events related to technology and the arts, please remember to check out the Technology and the Arts events page at techarts.wordpress.com.
Well, that just about wraps up this Technology and the Arts podcast. John, is there anything you'd like to share with the audience?
Well, as always, I'd like to say to our listeners that if they have an idea for a story or know about a show or event related to technology or art, to let us know about it by emailing us at technology.arts@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send an email to just say hi. And you're always welcome to leave a comment on the Technology and the Arts blog at techarts.wordpress.com.
Well, that closes the curtain on another Technology in the Arts podcast. Stay tuned for more news and resources related to technology in the arts when we come back with our next show on Wednesday, August 15th, 2007. So until then, for Technology in the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Mesnick. Take care.
For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.